Chapter 19. "It's a blessing that your wife was from home," added Gus. "He went to church this morning with Dr. Salt's family and sent word that she would spend the day with them. She was always glad to be away from Mrs. H., you know. She never knew on which side her bread was buttered," said Mr. Smithers. "Who should have taken the lady when she was in the humor, sir, and have borrowed the money elsewhere? Why, sir, I had almost reconciled her to her loss in that cursed company. I showed her how I had saved out of Bro's claws the whole of her remaining fortune, which he would have devoured in a day, the scoundrel. And if he would have left the matter to me, Mr. Titmarsh, I would have had you reconciled completely to Mrs. Haggerty. I would have removed all your difficulties. I would have lent you the pitiful sum of money myself." "Will you?" says Gus. "That's a trump." And he seized Smithers' hand and squeezed it so that the tears came into the attorney's eyes. "Generous fellow," said I, "lend me money when you know what a situation I am in and not able to pay." "Eh, my good sir, there's the rub," says Mr. Smithers. "Said I would have lent the money, and so to the acknowledged heir of Mrs. Haggerty I would at this moment, for nothing delights the heart of Bob Smithers more than to do a kindness. I would have rejoiced in doing it, and a mere acknowledgement from that respected lady would have amply sufficed. But now, sir, the case is altered. You have no security to offer, as you justly observe." "Not a whit, certainly. And without security, sir, of course can expect no money, of course not. You are a man of the world, Mr. Titmarsh, and I see our notions exactly agree. There's his wife's property," says Gus. "Wife's property? Bah! Mrs. Sam Titmarsh is a minor, and can't touch a shilling of it. No, no, no meddling with minors for me. But stop. Your mother has a house and shop in our village. Get me a mortgage of that." "I'll do no such thing, sir," says one. "Why, mother has suffered quite enough on my score already, and has my sisters to provide for, and I will thank you, Mr. Smithers, not to breathe a syllable to her regarding my present situation." "You speak like a man of honor, sir," says Mr. Smithers, "and I will obey your injunctions to the letter. I will do more, sir. I will introduce you to a respectable firm here, my worthy friends, Messrs. Hicks, Bix, and Blatherwick, who will do everything in their power to serve you. And so, sir, I wish you a very good morning." And with this Mr. Smithers took his hat and left the room, and after a further consultation with my aunt, as I heard afterwards, quitted London that evening by the mail. I sent my faithful Gus off once more to break the matter gently to my wife, fearing lest Mrs. Haggerty should speak of it abruptly to her, as I knew in her anger she would do. But he came in an hour panting back, to say that Mrs. H. had packed and locked her trunks, and had gone off in a hackney coach. So, knowing that my poor Mary was not to return till night, Hoskins remained with me till then, and, after a dismal day, left me once more at 9, to carry the dismal tidings to her. At 10 o'clock on that night there was a great rattling and ringing at the outer door, and presently my poor girl fell into my arms, and Gus Hoskins sat blubbering in a corner, as I tried my best to console her. Asterisk, 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 the next morning I was favored with a visit from Mr. Blatherwick, who, hearing from me that I had only 3 guineas in my pocket, told me very plainly that lawyers only lived by fees. He recommended me to quit Cursitor Street, as living there was very expensive. And as I was sitting very sad, my wife made her appearance. It was with great difficulty that she could be brought to leave me the night previous. "The horrible men came at 4 this morning," said she, "4 hours before light." "What horrible men?" says I. "Your aunt's men," said she, "to remove the furniture. They had it all packed before I came away, and I let them carry all," said she. "I was too sad to look what was ours and what was not. That odious Mr. Wapshot was with them, and I left him seeing the last wagon load from the door. I have only brought away your clothes, added she, and a few of mine, and some of the books you used to like to read, and some things I have been getting for the baby. The servants' wages were paid up to Christmas, and I paid them the rest. And see, just as I was going away, the post came, and brought to me my half year's income 35L. Dear Sam, isn't it a blessing? Will you pay my bill, Mr. What do you call him? Here cried Mr. Aminadab, flinging open the door. He had been consulting with Mr. Blatherwick, I suppose. Want the room for a gentleman? I guess it's too dear for the like of you. And here, will you believe it? The man handed me a bill of 3 guineas for 2 days' board and lodging in his odious house. Asterisk, asterisk, asterisk. There was a crowd of idlers round the door as I passed out of it, and had I been alone, I should have been ashamed of seeing them. But, as it was, I was only thinking of my dear, dear wife, who was leaning trustfully on my arm, and smiling like heaven into my face, and took heaven too, into the Fleet prison with me, or an angel out of heaven. Ah! I had loved her before, and happy it is to love when one is hopeful, and young in the midst of smiles and sunshine, but be unhappy, and then see what it is to be loved by a good woman. I declare before heaven, that of all the joys and happy moments it has given me, that was the crowning one, that little ride, with my wife's cheek on my shoulder, down Holborn to the prison. Do you think I cared for the bailiff that sat opposite? No, by the Lord. I kissed her, and hugged her, yes, and cried with her likewise. But before our ride was over, her eyes dried up, and she stepped blushing and happy out of the coach at the prison door, as if she were a princess going to the queen's drawing room. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.